Welcome to Technology Tangents. We get leaders together to discuss the important tech of today and the implications for tomorrow. Our discussions are fun, lighthearted, and frankly opinionated, but hopefully it gives you a sense of what matters, what to pay attention to, and what to ignore. Welcome back, Jason Goth, our resident CTO.
Hey, Vincent, I'm cold today.
It is cold. Gray, dark, and a bit rainy here in Dallas, Texas. Supposedly, no, we're not the sunny state. I don't know. We're just Dallas. Is there a logo, a catchphrase for Dallas? I actually don't know this.
The Big D.
The Big D?
Yeah,
okay. Okay, fair enough.
It's most people
don't ask questions that you don't know the answer to on a podcast, I guess.
Most people would look at it and say it's like 40 degrees. It's not cold. It's freezing in Dallas. So I think water freezes at 45 in Dallas.
Well, in fairness,
we're not used to this cold. It's like when I'm up in Chicago or New York, they're like, what? What's the problem?
Yeah. In fairness, I thought it was supposed to be nice today. I thought it was like 70. But anyway, let's get on with it. Today, I want to talk to you about what everybody else in the world is probably doing on their podcast, which is 2023 predictions. But I don't want to do what everybody else is doing and make our own predictions. That's too easy. Instead, I want to take the even easier path and critique other people's predictions. That is to say, I want to actually like go through some of the top leading analyst firms like Gartner and Forrester and IDC, et cetera, look at what they're saying, and then kind of just get your real-time, unfiltered reaction. Sound fun?
That sounds awesome because I always have opinions on other people's work.
Well, that's what we're supposed to be doing around here. All right, so I'm not exactly sure how to go about this. Let me just start with, we'll put all these, by the way, we'll put these in the actual show notes so you can go see their actual predictions. But let me just kind of go through, let me start with Gartner. Go through some of the top ones here. Maybe I won't get to all 10 of theirs because I want to do Forrester and some of the others as well. And there's some overlap, but let's just get started, shall we?
Okay.
Gartner's first theme of predictions, and there's basically three of them around this, is around optimize. And they say, this is again Gartner saying, these trends optimize IT systems for greater reliability, improve data-driven decision-making, and maintain value and integrity of artificial intelligence systems in production. So far, that sounds like a good thing. I don't have any issue with that. The question is, how do you do that, I suppose? And so their first one is called what they're calling digital immune system. And I'll just like summarize real quick. The idea here is like increase of observability of these AI systems so that, you know, you don't have them falling over and causing problems. And that seems reasonable.
Yeah, I don't have any problems with that. I mean, I think software in general has quality problems. It's something we deal with. We deal with that a lot of our clients. There's often a lot of focus on, you know, net new, but a lot of times what really needs to be focused on is quality. And, you know, back to Netflix with their, you know, chaos monkey, chaos engineering, and how do we improve through automation quality, quality, quality. I think in general, that's a good thing. It not only lowers costs, it provides better experiences. I don't know that it's all that net new, maybe an evolution, right, into the AI or security spaces. But in general, I think that would be my issue isn't that that's not a good thing or that shouldn't be done. It's like no one ever seems to do it. People, things turn around, the economy turns around, and all of a sudden the money starts flowing and new ideas start flowing and nobody wants to work on making sure that the trains run on time. And I guess my summary there would be awesome. Please let's actually see it through though.
Yeah, no, that's good. Yeah. I mean, I agree with all that. And I would say that this in theory is a great idea. Like we should absolutely do it. The question is, I guess, you know, for the sake of this pod, is that really gonna be the major theme in 2023? And the answer is probably not in my mind. Like the reason I say that,
I was gonna say, and maybe it will, you know, we talked to Kevin Erickson a couple weeks ago, you know, talking about, hey, with the economy going bad, people are going to be looking at ways to batten the hatches. Right. And so maybe this time, you know, will be some if it's an ability to, if some of those things, for example, cut costs or maintenance costs.
Well, that's where I was going with it is I think the reason I say, because I do think that this is going to continue to be, you know, I'm going to take the David Sachs opinion of the world here and say it's a double dip recession that we're coming through. And so right now we're kind of on the upswing here at the end of, in the middle of December, I suppose. But I think we're going to have a downturn next year. I just don't see how the supply side issues are going to be solved and the Fed's going to have to keep raising rates in order to get demand down, et cetera. So the reason I'm a little bit hesitant on this one is, while it's a great idea, a lot of these systems today, these AI systems, didn't actually make it to production yet. And so now if you're a CIO, a CDO, a CEO, asking yourself, well, now my team has something that's close to production. I need to cut costs, but it's not in production. It's not driving revenue right now. It might, but it might not. Do I want to go invest in making all of the observability stuff on top of it? I'm skeptical all of a sudden, right? Like, I just don't think, I think we're going to get cut. So if it's already in production, maybe a different story. If you're having a lot of downtimes, you're driving real revenue, and you're like, hey, how do we make this thing more reliable so we can continue to drive revenue? Sure. I just don't think that most organizations are at that point yet. I think they're still a little pre that moment in time. And so I'm hesitant to say this is going to be a major trend next year. I think it's just, I think at the time, if we had 6 more months, maybe, but I just don't think so.
Well, I haven't actually read that Gartner article, so I'm not sure exactly. Is it focused on AI specifically, or just, you know?
Yeah, this whole theme of theirs around optimized is specifically around AI and systems in production. They say, you know, the integrity of artificial intelligence systems in production.
Okay, because I'm thinking if it's, you know, the heading was something
digital
like
immune
system.
Digital
right?
immune
well,
system.
Well, I think there's a lot of non-AI systems that need an immune system boost, right? And so I would actually think that you could get some benefit from doing it, you know, just in the systems that you did today.
Really? Like if you were a CIO, you know, choose your favorite client, whatever one you want to choose, is that really going to be a major lever for cost savings or growing revenue at the moment? Do you think they're wasting enough cycles dealing with downtimes, outages, issues that they could actually drive incremental profit or revenue?
I think some are. And I also think a big part of it is just being very efficient with your resources.
Sure.
Right. So.
Well, but like that, I think that's the issue is, I agree, you get an efficiency play, but what's the payback? Like, how long does it take to recover your... So again, if we're going to go implement, you know, Chaos Monkey, for example, well, that's going to cost something. A bunch of systems are going to fall over immediately because they weren't designed to handle, you know, random APIs being shut down. And you're going to spend a bunch of energy and cost, frankly, right now to fix those things. No doubt you get increased efficiency over midterm and long term, but is the payback quick enough that it makes sense to do it now? That's my challenge. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. You may be right there.
Just remember, like with inflation, you know, with the effective nominal rate of inflation being, you know, like 6%, if you do free cash flow type discounting, you know, discounting free cash flow type analysis, you really need paybacks in less than 6 months for it to make sense in most cases, right?
Yeah, I do think some people have, you know, we have a client that's had a couple of major outages that have impacted payment, and I do think they'd have a view that they have a very significant problem with a real payback. When I was talking about efficiency, what I mean is some of what needs to be done in these kind of immune system cleanup, make things reliable and fault tolerant, is really around the ability to scale up and scale down. You can get a lot of cost efficiency or cost savings out of that fairly quickly. As well as, you know, if you make things a little bit more bulletproof, then have some, avoid some of the lost revenue or other things. But I generally think this is something that people should be focused on all the time. And I think if you look at like Netflix or these other companies that are very heavily digital engineering product focused, they do a lot of it.
Yeah.
They do a lot of it. Is that right? They do a lot of it. They spend 30-40% of their budget all the time on fixing technical debt, improving scalability, you know, making things more efficient, right? If something runs twice as fast, you need half as many servers to run it, kind of things. And as a result, you know, they're always in a position to adopt new things. You know, you're not building a house on the sand, so to speak. So I'd argue that people need to always be doing this. They never seem to, you know, maybe the recession will force some of that or drive some of that. But again, you may be right. It may then be looked at as deferred maintenance. Like, well, now we really can't afford it.
Yeah, that's my suspicion personally for next year in particular. Okay, moving on. We have to go faster if we want to make it through all 50.
Okay, let's go.
I'm just kidding. We're not going to do 50, but we have to go faster. The second one they have is applied observability. And this one required a little more digging on my part to figure out like what they mean by that. And I think it really comes down to their, one of their examples that I thought was quite clean is the idea that you could sell insurance based off your observed behaviors. So Tesla, for example, has their own insurance. Of course, they have their own cars with lots of sensors that they know better than anybody else. They can leverage that to give you some premium that's specifically designed for you. And from my perspective, I think this actually will be a big trend next year. If you think about it from the consumer perspective, you think about it from the business perspective, anything you do to reduce the realized cost of the product that you're offering is going to be a big boon. So for your point of the previous one of around immune system, if a company comes to you and says, hey, we think you're wasting a bunch of money on provisioning your environment and shutting it down appropriately fast enough, et cetera, we will come in and do at our own risk all the analysis and implementation of a solution and usually have a cut of the savings. I think those kinds of offerings from a business standpoint make a lot of sense now. And I think the same will be from the consumer side. Because again, the reason interest rates are going up is because they want to suppress demand. They want people to have less spendable money effectively. And so I think anything that you could do to get value to the end user is going to end up being a big deal next year.
Yeah, I agree. The concern I might have with some of those offerings would be around privacy. You know, there's going to have to be some opt-in.
Sure.
And everyone loves to opt in until, you know, something happens with their data. And then, you know, it's like, wait, I didn't want that. You know, whether it be like health stuff with your watch or, you know, can you improve your insurance cost with your watch? Several people have the driving, right? You know, the little device that hooks onto the OBD2 port to measure your driving. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely can see those kind of offerings.
I just think like in a world where you have less disposable income, you're willing to, you know, the saying is if you don't pay for the product, you are the product. I think right. People are more willing to be the product when right. They don't have money.
Right.
They're like, I think look at Netflix, right? Like they're going to bring ads into the service that has been ad free for a long time. Why? I think because people are more cost sensitive than they ever have been. Not ever, but recently have been past decade. And so I think we're just going to see more people care. Unfortunately, I think they're going to care less and less about privacy. That's my guess.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think those are two really easy examples, car insurance, health insurance. What other industries would applied observability be relevant in? I'm trying to think through some other examples. See, this is what happens when you prepare and I don't. And you pepper me with questions. I have to stop and think.
Great question. Yeah, I mean, I think there are some other examples that you can think about just in terms of how do you actually, it sort of goes back to this idea of being data-driven with any decision you make.
Maybe some of the digital twin stuff, like, you know, predictive maintenance, those type of things.
That actually comes later, I think, in Gartner's report. But yeah, I think those are other examples where you're actually making decisions based off what you see. So I think this could fit there too.
Yeah, it seems like a really reasonable assertion that those will be valuable things in times like these.
The next one is called AI Trism, T-R-I-S-M. The idea is that it supports AI model governance, trustworthiness, fairness, reliability, robustness, et cetera. And it adds methods for explainability in AI and rapidly deploying new models, actively managing security, privacy, and ethical issues.
So this one, I tend to think a lot around what you said around the first one. It's very true that, yeah, we don't have a lot of those things today, but we're not using a lot of those models for many, many things in terms of, you know, AI specifically, not the other systems. So I'd agree, like, why do we spend the money, right? We have a car in the garage that we don't ever take out and drive. Let's go, you know, soup up the engine.
Right. Yeah, I think, you know, I'd put this into the category of MLOps are certainly important if you're doing it today. And I think that covers not everything they mentioned here, but a lot of it. I'd say the other part is on the ethics side, on the explainability side. Look, these are still very nascent fields that we don't really have good answers for. And I just can't imagine companies dumping huge amounts of R&D to try and figure it out in order to then put into production. So I just think there's no way that's 2023 in my mind.
Yeah. And I think we've talked about explainability here before, which is it's hard. I mean, we use these models specifically because we don't have a framework to explain it.
Yeah.
And so how is the machine then going to explain it to us?
Yeah, simple human brains. Geez, Neuralink needs to get farther along.
Yeah, no doubt.
Okay, theme two Gartner has is around scale. And so I'm just going to read the top three things they have, and we can talk about them as a group, if you will. The first one is industrial cloud platforms. So, of course, that's like the cloud offerings from the major providers here. Platform engineering. These are the tools that let you do that stuff more efficiently. And then wireless value realization. And this is really about cellular connectivity, I think, more than anything.
So when they say scale, they're talking about these are technologies that exist and we're going to see them more broadly adopted or widely adopted. Is that what they're saying?
I think the scale point is just like the tools that allow you to increase the rate of product delivery as well as the reach of these products. And then they're saying these are the big things to be the theme for next year.
Oh, gotcha.
All three of these specific things are going to be big next year.
Well, I definitely agree with the platform engineering one. That is something we already see a lot of our customers moving towards. As you know, we start looking at, we've got lots of product teams and data teams. They all need, you know, resources from the platform perspective, whether that be storage or compute, whatever. And the ability to automate that and provide that quickly and not, you know, I need a server, I submit a ticket, and 13 days from now someone picks up that ticket. That can't really, those type of approaches really get in the way of innovation. And so I think customers realize that already and have started down that platform, you know, engineering path.
Yeah, I think that's right. I'd add one caveat here from my perspective, which is I think a lot of the move to the cloud has already been forced by thanks to COVID. Effectively, that whole transformation, if you want to call it that, it was really accelerated. And frankly, if you're not already there, I don't see how you're going to move there in a tough economic time. So I think that's going to be tricky. So
no, I agree, but I think this is more about not moving to the cloud, but more about being smarter about using it in terms of automation.
Right. Yeah. And so that's what I'm saying is like, I think if you're not already there, I don't think, I don't think I'm gonna move there, but for those who are already there, I think more than ever, to your point, especially if you're gonna imagine a world where you might have to do layoffs, you might have churn in the workforce. Again, who knows what's gonna happen with unemployment? It's still 3% or something, incredibly low. I don't know what's gonna happen on that front, but I think that having resilient systems, I mean that resilient to your actual staff turnover, is going to be critical. And I think the only way you get there is through very standardized methods of development and deployments and all of that being sort of taken care of by these tools.
Back to the first grouping of Gartner, this also helps, that standardization automation also helps in terms of reliability and, you know, immune system. You know, things are more bulletproof when people are not manually crafting them all the time.
Right.
And we get a lot of economies of scale for standardizing on some things. So yeah, I definitely think that'll be a big focus.
What about the wireless last point here, the wireless value? Is wireless going to be a big deal next year in your mind?
I think wireless is already, I'm not sure how much more of a big deal it can get.
Well, I guess like, do you think that more devices are going to be focused on connectivity without internet? Do you think you're going to see 5G show up and be a bigger deal than it is? Like, is that going to be the new wave, or are we pretty satisfied with that this implementation solution we have? Like, do you imagine that every device now that doesn't currently, next year's gonna be the big year, like, oh, well, all these devices that, you know, our monitors never had cellular, now they have cellular connection. Is that, in your mind, a big deal, or?
I mean, I think, well, 5G as, like, a way to get faster speed, you know, for devices that are consuming more and more and more bandwidth, great. That's just like the progression, 3G, 4G, 5G, more G's, faster, better, right? But the idea that we're going to spend a bunch of money to like connect a lot of devices to 5G without a use case is sort of a build it and they will come.
Yeah.
Like maybe there will be a lot of new use cases that people think of that where they can connect one of these devices and get some utility out of it. I just don't know what they would be. So yeah. And maybe that's just a limitation of my imagination. I'm not the most imaginative person out there, but you know, yeah. So we were talking with Ian in the last podcast about my fishing is, I don't know, you could put a Bluetooth, you know, connection in your fishing rod. And I thought, why would I do that? What would be the point? And I think some of the times that a lot of these predictions, like they go on the art of the possible. We could put chips and wireless devices and suitcases and everything else. And I'm like, great, but for what purpose? Like, I tend to think that if you start with the purpose and work backwards, it works better.
Yeah, I think on this one, I have to take Kevin's advice and you got to retrench on your core business. I don't think now is the time to be like venturing out and trying wild, crazy ideas. I think you have to really start with what's the value it's going to create. And that really leads us into this third category, third and final, which is about pioneering. And these are the trends that enable business model changes, reinventing engagement with employment or with employees and customers. These, the three here, I don't know if I should do them all together because I think one will be, whatever, I'm going to do all three. The first one is super apps, this idea that you have these multifaceted applications, like China's a big deal there. They do that really well. We don't really have those in the US today, so that'll be a big area next year. Adaptive AI, which I'm going to give them benefit of that. They're saying continuously retrain models and runtime and learn based off the data, which sounds like any good system, but whatever. And then three, metaverse.
Well, I think the first one is cheating, right? Because Elon's already said like he wants to turn Twitter into a super app. So like you predicting that he's going to do that is
yeah, sure.
Like just reading the news. But I don't know if Twitter becomes a super app, but it doesn't seem like there are many people poised to do that. You know,
Venmo. Well, I think you had a good snarky comment to me earlier, which is there can be exactly one.
Right, so. By definition. We're going to have one app that does everything instead of two apps that do everything. So Twitter could be in a position to do that.
You but know, I think like in
PayPal,
fairness,
Venmo, WhatsApp. My point is it's not a general trend. I mean, General Motors is not going to build a super app.
Right. Yeah. No, I think you're right in that like because Twitter has now declared this, you can imagine a lot of other companies like, well, shoot, I don't want to miss on the bandwagon. I'm going to try the same thing. So insofar as it's a big deal next year, I'm happy to accept that one. That one now, seems reasonable to me.
Now, maybe there are connectivity into the super app.
Sure. Right?
Your super app can start your car, and so there's connectivity between, you know, whatever the super app is. What did Elon want to call it? X?
That's a fascinating question, which is in China, the way they work, of course, is like one app literally does everything. But maybe the US model is more like the App Store in that like the iPhone is the super app, not literally, but conceptually is that super. And you have all these apps. So you build one super app and GM can build a module that then lets you unlock your GM and BMW can do the same. And, you know, you could use PayPal or Venmo.
Or all the whatever. Payment vendors plug into it. Again, right, like they plug into Apple Wallet. So maybe. I don't know. Maybe.
I do think it'll be a big deal next year, to your point. Again, I think it's cheating because Elon already said that's the point. So, you know, okay, fine. So fine. Adaptive AI, I'm so biased on how they phrase this. So I don't know. Do I think it's a big deal? Yeah, again, insofar as you have a model, you need to retrain the model. So I don't think that's different. Is it going to be a big deal next year? No, for the same reason I said before, which is I don't think most organizations have really seen value out of these things. And I don't think that being able to retrain on the fly is going to be the unlock for that. It's more about all the fundamental engineering and solving real problems that we've talked about before. So
I'm not even going to address Mel. Like, no, you know, we have a whole podcast on that. It's
Okay. The last one they had on the theme for, sorry, I thought that was the last one. There was one more. This only had one topic. That's why I was thinking it was over. Is sustainability. And this is all the ERG kind of things. Like, people are going to want to understand how much of everything they're using and miles they're burning, and it's a fuel for miles plans, right? But again, my perspective is I just don't see it. Like, I just don't think in a world where you have constrained resources and you're cutting budgets everywhere, that this ends up being a differentiator for most organizations.
You know, I saw in Forrester that there's actually been a lot of fines, penalties, lawsuits around people misrepresenting their sustainability. And you know, Forrester's idea was the exact opposite, that you're going to see people retreat from that as a way to limit their liability. I do think maybe this would be, and maybe this is kind of crosses back to the other topic around, you know, some type of digital twin or what did they call it? Applied observability. You know, again, maybe with things not doing so well and people looking to save money, maybe, you know, your house, like can you save energy by keeping your house cooler, or, you know, some of the Nest and smart learning things in the house. Okay. Maybe. And maybe that could be lumped under sustainability. I don't know, but I do think that's maybe a use case that could be take off a little bit next year.
Yeah. That's a good one. Okay. So let's move on to Forrester. Then that's Gartner. Those are the big ones. Forrester really thinks that smart business leaders will get focused, pruning efforts that aren't bearing fruit and prioritizing long-term growth. So that's much more aligned with sort of what we had said previously when Ericsson was on. And so theirs have more of a flavor that I think align more with what we believe, but let's just go to them. Consumers are to be cautious, but don't pull back on spending. That actually, that last part, I personally disagree with. I think consumers will, the Fed will force, if nothing else, the Fed will force them to cut back on spending because inflation.
The Fed does not control Leslie Goth. And so, my wife. And so, she's got no plans to cut back on spending.
Okay, so
that's
Jason,
a joke. That's Jason's a joke, Leslie. I'm going to be so in trouble when I get home.
Yeah. Okay. The second one is a skills shortage challenges CX teams' ability to thrive.
I think that's true today. I think that's a statement of a fact right now.
Yeah, and I think this is where, again, I'm going to take a little bit of issue with what they say. Again, in general, I agree. It's definitely a statement of today. But I just have to believe, you know, as we've talked about numerous times, we're like, you know, almost a quarter of a million people into layoffs now in Silicon Valley alone. And we can look back historically, these downturns are when the best startups are built. I think that what will necessarily happen is unemployment will tick up and there will be historically look really great talent that's been locked up at these big FANG companies for a while because they will just outpay. They'll pay more than anybody else possibly can. That has changed. They are changing their models today. They've laid people off. They will continue to lay people off, I suspect. Those people will become available. So I actually think 2023 is going to be where this changes. Now, how far into the year, I don't know. I don't have a good estimate for that. So this might be true for the first half of the year, first quarter of the year, first few months of the year, maybe the first three quarters of the year. But I think the Fed will get it under control. And that, I think, will necessitate organizations doing more pruning internally, which will free up labor, talent. Also, by the way, don't forget that the pandemic forced a lot of people into early retirement. Force is a strong word, but encouraged them into early retirement. They took packages, et cetera. If inflation stays high for very long, those retirement accounts are going to look a lot less powerful than they did a year or two ago. And I think some of those workers will return to the workforce, maybe begrudgingly, frankly. Next one is monitoring technology riles employees.
So monitoring technology in terms of like watching what you do online, yeah, or exactly. Are you actually in Teams? Are you in the office? Yes, did you actually swipe your badge?
It's exactly that.
I think that's like riled employees many? Forever. Again, that's a statement of absolute certainty right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think I agree. And I do think that managers are going to be leaning into this more. You've already seen some stuff from Elon again. Very controversial figure right now, I suppose. But I think he's doing a lot. I said a great article, you know, it said something to the title was something to the effect of Elon is what many managers' inner voice is saying. He's just saying it out loud kind of mentality. And I think that's generally true. I think that a lot of managers are questioning, like, how productive are my employees? Are they really working? Or is it like the TikToks of the world where they have all these channels, all these videos now where, you know, it's the life in the day of a, you know, a day in the life of a Google engineer. And they're like, buying Furrio and getting their nails done and working a second job, right? We've seen a huge number uptick in the people who have two full-time jobs and just not telling their employer. I think that's probably overblown in some sense. I don't know what their numbers are, but I do think a lot of managers are worried that their employees are one of these people.
Or the quiet quitting thing. I saw something in the Wall Street Journal about that they had estimated over half of the workforce was quiet quitting, right?
Yeah.
That seems like a very high number. I don't know how that could be true, but I do think it is, you know, a significant amount. And that is, in a sense, an immune system response to that. And so I absolutely think it will happen and people will be upset about it.
Yeah.
But, you're running a business and, you know, especially when times are tough, your alternative may be worse.
Yeah. And I think, you know, that's exactly right. I think there's some fear that will probably be instilled in people as they start seeing their friends and colleagues get laid off. They're going to really want to probably double down is my best guess. And I'd say the other thing is that for the better or worse, a lot of the technology required to monitor, you know, are you working or not working? What websites are you on? What's already implemented because of security reasons during COVID. When everybody moved to home, those networks, those environments were less secure. And so IT got real smart about how to make sure these things are secure, which is all you really need. These same tools could be used for the monitoring right. purposes. The next one, it goes back to the point you raised earlier, which is greenwashing becomes serious business risk. That is, again, greenwash is the idea that you just sort of say, hey, we're green, and you make your brand look like it, even though you don't really care about it or you're not really doing it just for the sake of virtue signaling.
Right, so the prediction was what? that would continue to happen, or
no, that becomes a serious business risk, I think.
Okay. That it becomes a business risk.
A serious business risk. I think that's true. I mean, yeah. I think you're going to see more of this. My guess is I don't know how much that becomes public versus just happens in sort of, you know, behind closed doors in the boardroom and people just slowly back away from it. But I do think there will be far less of that in the new year.
Well, I think if there's regulation around it, then I do think it is an actual public thing, which is a risk, because anytime there's regulation, there's fines.
Right. That's right. Enforcement. Yeah. Leaders try to force employees back into the office with disastrous results. I don't know. Like, this is where, again, I think it'll be curious. I'll be curious to see. It could be true, could not be true. I think that there, again, back to this point I made just 2 seconds ago, I do think there's a lot of managers who are worried about, like, what are my people doing? How do I evaluate them? Especially when it comes to layoffs. Like, if you as a leader are forced to reduce your staff, how are you going to do you have enough information today to actually decide that? Who am I going to keep and who am I going to let go? If you're forced to make that call, could you make it today? I think a lot of the leaders that I talk to would be hard pressed because they just aren't sure who's doing what anymore.
You know, what's really interesting, I think that these types of predictions / studies really focus on people, I would say midway through their career. But I think if you look on the younger end, we get a lot of new hires off of campus. We're a consulting firm, just like every other consulting firm. We hire people off campus and we train them up and develop them and develop their skill sets as consultants. Well, I've talked with a lot of our younger consultants, and they want to be in the office. They want to be in the office for social connection. They want to be in the office to learn. You know, they were affected greatly by lockdowns, maybe not getting to go to school, right? Not getting to go to college, be together, not missing out on, you know, a lot of the things that people typically do, go to graduations and homecomings, those type things. And they're very much wanting to get in there. So I think people do start, you know, the pendulum swings back into more in office, but I don't think that's because managers are going to make people do it. I think it's because people are going to want to do it. And so that's, I don't think that there's going to be a lot of pushback against that.
That's interesting. That's a really interesting perspective. I do think if you get to a world where layoffs start happening regularly, back to the point I made, I think a lot of managers are not sure who's doing what anymore. And I think a lot of employees recognize that. And they're like, hey, does my manager really know all the effort I'm putting into this work, what I'm delivering, et cetera? And I suspect to that point, there is this natural incentive to make sure that you're in the, assuming you're managing the office, that you're in the office too, so that they can see you day in, day out.
And this, I do think there's a generational gap here in that I think the people that, and again, the people I talk to, the folks that do not want to be in the office are typically more senior in their career, maybe have kids at home, have a longer commute, you know, and are looking to, you know, make life easier to get home and drive to the soccer game. Whereas it's the younger workforce that is coming right out of college and maybe the first few years out of college where they're wanting that more of that connection and learning and personal, relationship building.
Well, I think,
but again, but the point is, like, well, if I go in, is my boss even going to be there? And right. So that's, I think, where the tension may be the other direction, is what I'm saying.
That's really fast. By the way, if that were true, so again, assume senior leaders probably start showing up to the office more because they just that generationally, to your point, that's what they're used to. That's what they.
I'm here.
You're here every day
because I need to get out of my house. My wife wants me out of her house.
Well, after Commons, like the early one, I'm not surprised.
Yeah, no kidding.
So they're there, and then the most junior staff ends up being there again because they desire to be there. It'd be really interesting to see what happens if only the middle management, in some sense, isn't in the office. Like, what dynamic that would ultimately create.
Yeah, it actually has. I've probably had, you know, we have our campus hires start in the summer, and they spend several months in a lot of training and those type things. And I've probably had more coffees or lunches with some of the campus hires this year than I have in the past several.
Yeah. That'd be interesting how that impacts their career long term. I mean, there's some studies out there that talk about especially early in your career, FaceTime turns out to be just critical. I mean, it turns out to be really, really helpful in accelerating all this. So it's intriguing. Okay, moving on. The metaverse.
Pass.
No, you're actually not like this one. Metaverse experiments fall short of capturing public imagination.
Oh, I agree.
Yeah, I think that's, it's just so early on the metaverse stuff. You know, you saw the initial stuff. It's a tough market MVP. We've talked about all the challenges there. Go back and listen to that if you're curious. But yeah, I do think this is the year where that changes publicly. Like, I think people, the average mentality of like, oh, that's so cool, we have to do it, it turns into like, eh, that's like holograms back in the day. They seemed so cool and then they never went anywhere because what are you going to do with them?
So you're saying it's accurate. Crested the hype cycle and it's headed for the trough of disillusionment. I tend to agree with that.
Yeah.
Well, and as we talked about on the previous pod, there's just still a lot of technology challenges to make it, you know, meet expectation that, you know, maybe multiple years in the making.
Okay. Next one. The talent crush pushes tech execs to seek new sources of candidates. Mm. I've already sort of addressed that. I think that the talent crunch will be abated sometime this next year. So I don't know. It's going to flip personally.
I know. I think you and I see this one differently, I think, because I hear what you're saying, but you know, it always seems to happen that even though when, you know, people are getting laid off, you're like, we still can't find a lot of different roles that we want. Mm-hmm. And even though that there have been a lot of people in those roles laid off. Now that may be because, like you also said, it's a great time to do a startup. People are getting a lot of options.
Well, and they just got 3 to 6 months of severance. Right. So.
But I do think we specifically have started doing, and you know, looking at different channels of hiring. Right. Sure. And I do think that continues. Maybe it's not the tech or the talent crunch or availability of resources that drives it, but maybe it's just yet another, you know, channel to add to the top of the funnel to find great resources. Right. And so I do see that continuing. And I actually have participated in some of these kind of recruiting things in some of these alternative channels. We use up, you know, instead of going to every campus, going to the campus job fair, which we still do sometimes, but there's an online kind of virtual one we've started doing. We started looking at some of the code camps and some of that. We looked at people that, you know, from non-traditional, you know, more from industry, not from consulting, mm-hmm. that we've looked to hire more, you know, especially at the senior levels. And so I generally think that that is a good thing.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think those are all really good things. And I think to that point, the other thing that will have to happen, just to be really clear, I do think that these people will start hitting the market again eventually. I think they're taking a beat because they have plenty of time to think about it in their mind. I also think, you know, it's a bit like the housing market. Look, could I sell my house today for what it was worth last year? The answer is like, clearly no. Interest rate alone, like make that like a non-starter. Would I believe that if I was trying to sell my house today? Would I actually believe that? Would I be willing to take a material hit on the value of that home? Not yet, not mentally anyway, not really, right? And so I think just like emotionally, if nothing else, it will take a minute for people to recalibrate on the market. And I think those people are going to be expecting exactly what they got, you know, before, and probably a raise because they're switching to a job, right? And they're going to think they're amazing. They need all the yogurts and all the things they used to have. It will take a minute. It'll take a minute. So again, I don't know how long in the next year we'll see, but it will take a minute. So fair. Last one they had is scandals at tech companies burn through consumer trust.
Again, I don't know. Is that a prediction or is that a...
Yeah, I guess they think it's going to be, that's going to be the hot topic next year. I don't know.
I don't know that that's a prediction as much as a statement of fact.
Yeah. I think today, the only thing they'd say here is, you know,
didn't Meta just have one of those? And the credit reporting companies have one of those. And
right. Yeah. No, it's fair. They say a key business tech priority for 2023, Forrester says, is trust in various guises. Consumers are increasingly wary of organizations playing fast and loose with their personal data, and regulators aren't far behind. And it won't stop there. Fueled by the ire of fed-up consumers and employees, regulators will scrutinize greenwashing, misinformation, and employee surveillance. I don't know. Nothing more.
I think that's absolutely happening today and will only accelerate.
Okay, so I won't go through. That was all the Foresters, by the way. There are others here. This chart actually comes from ZDNet. I'm just going to go through their citation frequency. So they basically went through a bunch of these reports, tried to just categorize how often they were mentioned. So let's just hit the top five or so that are new anyway, and we'll call it a day. The first was connectivity. This is Wi-Fi, fixed mobile, satellite. We already talked about that. Metaverse.
But we didn't talk about the satellite. I mean.
Oh, okay, fine. Satellite.
But again, I think that's not a prediction. That's picking up the Wall Street Journal. Yeah, SpaceX is going to launch 7,500 satellites. Well, or got approved to. So we're going to predict that they launch 7,500 satellites. Okay.
Sure.
Great. But
do you think from a technology standpoint, from a technologist standpoint, do you think that changes anybody's business that rural parts of the world now have high broadband or high connectivity broadband internet in a way that was materially different than before for you as a CIO, or is it like more of the same?
I think connectivity always offers some new capability, right? You connect the continents with transatlantic cable. There's all kinds of new capabilities. And so, yeah, I do think it will. Now, I don't think it's going to create any new type of technology, but it's more of a broader reach of existing technology.
Yeah. And so I guess that's sort of my point of more of the same. You're as a CIO, as a CEO even, my potential user base, the total addressable market might increase if I require broadband. But is there anything different you would do as a business?
Maybe, I mean, track packages in the ocean, right? You track packages today. It's not, it's more, like you said, more of the same and maybe with a broader scope. And so I think it's all good. Mm-hmm. It's all good and it's somewhat low, easy since those technologies exist. You're just looking for the connectivity. So I do, if you put that into the, it's got value and it's low hanging, it's easy to do. A lot of opportunity to go move into that space. So that's probably why it's cited so much. I know these are ranked in order of number of citations, right?
Yep, that's right. Okay, number two, metaverse, but they also lump in VR, AR, XR, MR. I don't know what MR is.
Pass.
Meta reality? I don't know what MR stands for. Okay, well, anyway. Okay, yep. AI, machine learning. We already talked about that. Again, headline is, yeah, I think it's going to be important, but I don't think that we've seen a huge amount of value from many mid-market or sort of non-digital native companies. I don't think next year's the year everybody suddenly cracks the code and figures out how to do this. In fact, I think it actually gets pushed out a little bit because funding will get cut. Sustainability, we talked about cybersecurity, trust, and privacy. Anything you want to add there, Jason?
I think that goes back to the previous topic that we were talking about that Forrester had around, hey, regulators are going to get more involved. People are going to get more demanding of trust. Or people are going to demand more from companies in terms of privacy and trust. Regulators are going to get more involved. And so I do think, companies are going to have to start making these things first-class citizens when they design, solutions and figure out how they're going to use data. So I do think that that's going to have a big focus. And I don't think that's just next year. I think that's the next forever.
Yeah, that's fair. Years. Yep, that's fair. Okay, I'm going to do two more here. This one I think is good. Geopolitics and tech supply chain. I mean, wow. The supply chain has been just demolished over the past few years. As soon as we thought we were getting back to something normal, it got all messed up again. I do think that there will be a material change in the way that supply chains are managed henceforth. And I think that all starts next year. I mean, we'll see what happens with retail. Yeah,
to get redundancy and...
Well, I think you're just going to have to multiple source in a way we just never have before.
Right.
Multiple sourcing out of Asia alone is not going to cut it anymore, I think is what a lot of people are realizing. Does that mean you're going to reshore, nearshore? I don't know. Well, I think that these things need to be really worked out. And I think next year is going to be the year that people figure this out. And I think we're going to see with retail. We saw earlier this year.
I think that the answer to that is yes. I mean... Just a recent bill passed to to the CHIPS Act to drive a lot of chip investment back on shore, and things are going to move to, you know, South America. I definitely think that that'll be the case, that the supply chain, you know, think of it as, you know, redundancy and resiliency, right? In order, you know, because whether it be natural disaster or, you know, a geopolitical event or, you know, something else, you know, companies do not want to be, you know, have the same experience they did as COVID. Now, what I do think that is going to do is increase cost of things.
Well, it has to, right? And I think that Peter Zeihan, I think that's his last name, had an interesting bit on this. He's a think tank guy. Effectively, he thinks there's a few cities in the U.S. that actually will have a massive resurgence in manufacturing, Texas being one of them, actually, down south. The problem with Texas is, like, that's going to be okay for, like, mid-level chips, high-level chips, certainly. But it's just going to load, like, stuff in a calculator or in a watch or whatever. Like, probably it should be way too expensive to do. So you're going to have to figure somewhere else out. And his argument is Mexico, actually, probably the place. There's the issue of course, all the drugs and corruption and all that you'd have to solve.
Safety,
exactly. But, like, that's his best guess of where that goes. But anyway, last one I want to do, hyperscale, multi-cloud, edge, fog computing. Next year, big deal. What do you think, Jason?
That's a lot of buzzwords in one thing. Yes. I think, you know, we talked a couple pods ago about the Adobe Figma, and, you know, my perspective there was that it's somewhat proof positive that cloud-based, cloud-native, you know, hyperscale solutions are going, you know, SaaS-based solutions are going to be the way that solutions will be delivered going forward. And or in many cases, and the way that people expect to interact with things. And so I don't see that. That's, again, that's for the next forever years. I don't see that one going away.
Yeah, I think it'll be especially hot next year if there is a downturn in the economy, because what better way to cut your cost than force your customer to do the compute for you? Like, look, if I can make the iPhone do all the compute and then just send me the answer, that's far better than me spinning up, you know, whatever cloud and GPUs or TPUs and then doing it there. Like, I'll just make them do it. Great.
Right.
Their electricity, their phone, their power, their everything. Like, great. So I think that actually will pick up again. So that one makes sense. Awesome. Well, this was fun. I don't know.
I like not having to do the work and let everybody else come up with topics, and we just, like, throw rocks at it.
That's right. Yeah.
Can all the podcasts be like that?
We just critique other people. Yeah. I don't know if that would ever get approved. Well, anyway, thank you for joining. I hope that was helpful for all of you. If you'd like to learn more, please visit the insights page at Credera.com. Thanks for listening, and I hope you'll join us again next time.